Hello, guys, gals, non-binary pals, big dumb objects, and other. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Lab. And this week we're going to be talking about the good, the bad, and the cliché of speculative fiction tropes. Yeah, we're just straight up doing speculative fiction because that's really what this show is, but again, we have to keep the branding intact. I'm your host, DJ Squared, and with me is my co-host,
Harper.
Yep, and we're going to talk about some of our favorites, and some of our least favorites, and some of the things that we have found while Googling, and we're just like, what the fuck? So, we're going to gonna kick things off here with a sort of definition of speculative fiction, just so everybody is made aware. Speculative fiction is a sort of umbrella term for various forms of fiction that are on the fantastic spectrum. You know, everything from science fiction to alternate histories to fantasy to steampunk to cyberpunk, those are all underneath the blanket of speculative fiction. Alternate histories are when you have one specific point in time where the history in the novel diverges from, you know, our current history. This can take a bunch of different forms, and that's one of my favorite tropes, actually. It's called Beethoven was an alien spy.
I've never heard of that.
So great. It's when historical figures are actually like aliens or wizards or someone else entirely. Or they aren't who you thought they were.
So that's the name of the trope?
Of the trope. Okay. Beethoven was an alien spy.
So what are some works that you've encountered?
Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yes. I've heard of it.
I saw it. It was so fun. Like, it was great in how bad it was. You know? It's one of
like
those...
Like Sharknado. Kind.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's one of those things that's super enjoyable. And you sit there watching it with a group of friends, and you rip it to shreds. That's what you do. Like, that's what happens.
I've only seen one alternate history, and that was A Man in the High Castle, the Amazon series. I haven't read the book, and I didn't continue with it, but I did find that alternate history fascinating. It was just a little too dark for me.
Yeah, that's the one where the Nazis
did win.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we basically took non-intervention stance, and we did not go fight in the war. And so we lost. And they took over, like, 3 years after the war ended, invaded the United States.
Yeah. So that's the type of thing we're dealing with. It can be very good. It can be very weird.
Like, Abe Lincoln.
Jesus is a wizard. Jesus is an alien.
Interesting.
It happens sometimes. I mean, like, the best version I can think of is, I almost forgot about Chevalier. Because I'm a weeb, I am weeb trash. Love anime, weeb trash. There is this one anime about a French knight, who was a real person, as Chevalier d'Eon, and Chevalier, for the people who don't know, is French for knight. The Chevalier d'Eon is about this knight, this real knight, who is being possessed by the soul of his dead sister.
And this is an alternate history one?
Yes.
Because he was a real knight.
Because he was a real knight. Okay. I don't think the sister was real. I don't actually know enough about French history to see if the sister was real. But he was possessed by the soul of his dead sister because she needed him to, like, get her revenge for her.
Right.
You know, like you do.
Yeah.
It's
classic.
It's fine. And also try to
murder.
And also try to actually, I was kind of unclear near the end of the anime whether or not she was trying to stop the French Revolution or tried to, like, ensure the French Revolution.
It's a big difference.
Either way, King Louis got fucked up. That was also the Queen of England was also being possessed by her dead sister at the same time. Like, we found that one out.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, cool, cool. Cool, fair enough. For anyone who's ever seen Black Butler, this is also has that trope, because Jack the Ripper is a female doctor and her death god butler.
Hmm.
She was upset with the prostitutes because she was jealous because they could have kids and she can't.
Oh,
so she just, like, cut out their uteruses.
To what end?
just because she was jealous and upset. Like these, I think it was that these women had children, but they, like, left them.
Okay.
Or, like, yeah. Otherwise, like, aborted them or got rid of them or somehow. And she's just like, how dare you? I can't have children.
Well, I was gonna say, if I were writing that story and I were a female doctor who can have children, I would kidnap them and find a way for them to be a surrogate for me instead of just killing them.
Maybe that was originally the plan, but things got...
She got too angry.
Things got a little unfortunate there.
Yeah.
All right.
So, one of the tropes that I was looking at is faster than light travel.
Yeah.
And it's just so prevalent that I didn't necessarily even ever think about it. Because how do you do space travel without faster than light travel?
Very slowly.
I mean, your movie would take years.
Like, take actual years.
Yeah, I mean, space is
big.
Infinite. Expanding. How do you travel that? I mean, you have to have faster than light travel. It moves the plot, and it moves you physically. So there were multiple ways of doing faster than light travel. There are wormholes, mm-hmm. if you want to move from one specific place to another. And then hyperdrives, jump drives, anything like that. So,
and then there's the faster than light travel that actually does not move you, but moves everything else around you.
I don't know that one.
Yeah.
What's an example of that?
That one is actually... They're pretty sure, I forget who it was, it might have been, like, this has been, like, legitimately theorized for human beings, like, they're trying to build this, but it's just,
It sounds harder than just moving one person.
Apparently not. Apparently, you just, making your current position a fixed point and then shifting everything else around you is easier.
I don't believe that.
That is also how Thor's hammer works. Mjolnir.
Can't say that I know much about Thor.
Thor's hammer, Mjolnir, is like... You know, the big thing about Thor's hammer is that only somebody who's worthy of Thor's hammer can wield it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's because Thor's hammer is made out of a substance, which I also forget the name of, but it, in the Marvel Universe... Thor's hammer is actually a fixed point in the universe.
Oh.
It does not move. It just moves the entire universe around it. Like, it looks like it's moving because everything else is moving relative to it. And the only one who can really sort of control that shift is Thor.
I had no idea.
So, yeah.
I'm sure that I've seen something in Marvel with Thor in it, but I don't know.
Like, come on, have you never seen the Avengers?
I think I've seen some. I mean, there's a lot of them, aren't there? Like, I don't even know. Maybe I haven't. I don't know.
Oh, no!
Maybe I haven't. I do like Marvel movies, and I'm going to see Black Panther on Saturday.
Ooh,
that's
fun.
That's Marvel, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it
Sometimes
is.
Sometimes I get confused.
DC, which one's Marvel, which one's DC?
I know.
It's fine. Generally, if the person is normal, like, if the person is a normal human being... then they're probably Marvel.
Really?
Unless they're Batman.
What about Spider-Man? He was normal.
I mean, Spider-Man is also Marvel.
Okay. What's DC?
DC is, like, aliens. Like, DC is aliens. It's, it's actually mostly aliens.
Okay.
It's aliens and Batman.
I was going to say, because I really, really liked the Batman movies, the three most recent ones.
Yeah.
But the faster than light travel, My example that I found was Stargate, which, as we talked about before, is one of my favorites. So in the movie and the TV show, they travel by wormhole, but they also have hyperdrive. So they have two different ways of traveling because they do have spaceships and do hyperdrive. They also teleport. And then the Stargate itself is a wormhole connection. So there are multiple ways that they use faster-than-light travel to get around, eventually, multiple galaxies when you follow the shows into the spin-offs. But, I mean, Star Trek had warp drive. Star Wars had light speed, I think is what it was called. So it's definitely, like, one of the most common tropes. So much so that I never even think about it.
Yeah, but since speculative fiction, like, science fiction itself and speculative fiction are just so, like, varied,
mm-hmm.
then it's just like, oh, yeah, that's not really a thing everywhere.
Right. Not in all of speculative fiction, but definitely in science fiction.
Like, cyberpunk, and I don't think they do a lot of it in new wave science fiction, do they?
I don't know. I just started the new wave unit in class.
I'm pretty sure since New Wave is supposed to be mostly about, like,
inner space.
Yeah, like,
edgy topics.
A little bit of cannibalism.
Yep, Buenos Dog. We actually discussed that today.
So. It's an experience for any of you who haven't read it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say if it's a good experience or a bad experience, but it's an experience. Your mileage may vary.
Yes.
Your faster than light mileage may vary.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
Cheesy jokes.
That is also a time-honored tradition in science fiction.
Puns and cheesy jokes.
It is the genre of dad jokes.
Yeah.
It really is. You can write an essay, and it's just the genre. Entitle it the genre of dad jokes.
I do love a good dad joke.
Doesn't everyone, though?
I really do.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. We have the collective sense of humor of a 10-year-old, but
this is off topic, sort of. But my brother, the moment he had a child, he became someone who used dad jokes constantly. Like, beforehand, his jokes were intelligent and witty. And then he had a kid, and it was just nonstop dad jokes. And it's just never, never stopped. 5 years now. Like, but it's entertaining. But
Maybe there needs to be a science fiction novel, or, like, short story anthology, about how fatherhood changes the human mind.
It does, but
alters the human mind in such a way that the only jokes that you can make
are
dad jokes.
Oh, man.
That's a solid anthology idea, people. Like, get on it.
You can write it.
I'll pull a Dr. Barr and write an entire anthology on my own.
Yeah, why not? Hers worked.
It works.
It was hilarious.
It's a good times. All right. Next trope I found was the big dumb object, which is, of course, mm-hmm. what we referenced in the opening, as well as, like, please don't take offense to the big dumb object because it's trying its best.
Oh, I just learned this term today in class. And I was thinking dumb meant unintelligent.
No.
But it means mute.
Yes.
I mean, I knew that that word meant two different things. Yeah. I just didn't know.
We just don't use it for mute anymore. But no, it's just this object. Except for some of them aren't mute. Like the one in Star Trek.
Which one?
The big... Did you watch City on the Edge of Forever?
No.
All right. Well, City on the Edge of Forever is, like, part of where the big dumb object comes from. And it's this giant gate. There's, like, they land on this planet, there's this giant gate on it, and the gate starts, like, it goes through the entirety of recorded human history. And I don't know why I think it's human history. I'm not entirely sure if it's, I can't remember off the top of my head if it's, like, just human history or just, like, or everybody's history.
Right.
But, like, they go back in time in human history. And, like, the gate talks. I don't know why it talks. No one knows. Or, like, if it doesn't talk, then, like, Spock can communicate with it because he's, you know, got the telepathy or whatever. Because touch telepaths, man. It's very useful. But yeah, like, I'm pretty sure the gate talks. I might be remembering that wrong. But it's still a big dumb object because it's just sort of there. And we never get an explanation for what it truly is or what it's doing there or why it does what it does. It's just sort of there.
Yeah, we talked about it in class. I think we talked about it because we read The Hall of the Machines by Langston Jones, I want to say. And it's just this ever-expanding hall with machines in it, and the humans don't know what the machines do. And so this scientist is trying to go in and study and classify the machines and make documentation. So I think the big dumb object was the machines, because we had no idea what they were doing. I mean, they were death machines and life machines and machines giving birth. So it's like we knew mechanically what they were doing, but we had no idea why they were doing what they were doing. Like,
what are you doing here?
What? I mean, literally giving birth, like with a rubber cervix and everything. Like, literally giving birth.
Interesting.
In this ever-expanding hall that they are building themselves the machines. So
interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask why, like, how the hall was ever-expanding.
Yeah, the machines are building walls up and tearing down old walls and then building them up. So there's a destructive machine and a constructive machine, and they are just expanding the hall. But we don't know why. So they're all big, dumb objects.
Like, all of them. Just, like, every single one of you.
And the whole story is just a description of these big, dumb objects. There's really no conclusion
it. No real plot to speak of. Yeah. It's just a it's like a field guide, but of, like, machines.
It is very weird and complex story. A very weird and complex story. But it is full of big, big, dumb objects.
Ah, yes. Good. It's like, what does this do? Why does it do the thing?
Well, I mean, some of them were machines with spinning blades, and they called them the death machines, and then...
Yes, the booby trap machines.
Yes. I mean, one was just, like, this intricate thing of needles that they couldn't figure out how all the needles were connected. They just somehow were up in the air, and then it rested and, like, fell apart in front of them.
Interesting. So, I'm like, all right, sure, why not? That also reminds me, like, how advanced do you think some of these societies in, like, Indiana Jones or whatever were, like, they have all these booby traps with, like, pressure plates and spinning blades and, like...
Yeah, that's a good point that I've never thought of. Like so at one point he falls into a pit of snakes. That's not that...
That's reasonable.
Yeah.
That's reasonable.
But everything else, you're right, that is complex.
Like, I have no doubt that people would find a way to do it because people are crazy and they have too much time on their hands. But
it is all very mechanical for those societies at that time period, I would say. I don't know.
Like the pressure plates in specifically. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that I could randomly come up with one or build one. Not without Google.
Me?
Or tools. I don't have tools. I have Google.
No. Oh, great. Now I'm trying to, like, actually build a prehistoric pressure plate system. Like, all right, how would you actually go about doing this? Like, it would be possible. I have no doubt that it would be possible. It would just be very, very hard.
Well,
like, you can make a pressure plate, but depending on, like, how far down it went, like, I don't think you could be able to release a giant boulder. Mm-hmm. I think you would be able to do that. And that's, like, one of the staples of the Indiana Jones universe is, you know, the giant rolling boulder that, like, chases him down the hallways, you know. The thing that I don't think that you could do would be the arrows, like... You know how sometimes you'd, like, hit a pressure plate and there's, like, either arrows or blow darts or something that come at you really fast?
Why do you think that's unrealistic?
Like, that one's, I think because, like, the amount of force required to do that. Like, if these traps have been standing for, like, thousands of years, with the technology they had on hand, any strings would probably have degraded long before then, and they don't have, like, air cannons.
So I haven't seen any of the Indiana Jones movies in a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So how old are these societies supposed to be? I know he's doing archaeology, so they must be old.
Yeah. They're, like, at least a few thousand years old.
We're talking, like, Incans, Mayans kind of societies?
Yeah, we're talking.
Okay. That makes more sense. Because at first I was like, when did those movies come out? Those societies aren't that old. And I'm like, wait, no, it's archaeology. He must be studying things from the past.
He's like, well, you know, grave robbing.
But right.
How old does a grave have to be before it's archaeology instead of grave robbing?
That's true. He makes some good points. I really, really have never thought of that.
And I made all of the any and all archaeologists in our audience very uncomfortable.
I was trying to think if I know any, but I know anthropologists, not archaeologists.
Well, them too. I think the only ones, I mean, like, paleontologists are straight up, they're looking for dead animals, like bones and stuff. Like, that's straight up. Is it grave robbing if they don't have an official grave?
Well, there are people out there that don't have official graves either. I mean, there are.
I mean, the entire Earth is just one big grave, and we're all living on it.
That's why I'm going to be cremated.
Oh, gosh. Also, to prevent me from coming back in the zombie apocalypse, that's...
Well, no one can rob my grave if I don't have a grave.
If you don't have a grave, you can't rob it. Fair enough.
Yeah. And I won't even be put into a nice urn, just a cardboard box, so they don't steal the urn either.
Have, like, a Tupperware container of your ashes.
No, Tupperware is valuable. People steal Tupperware, okay? All of my Tupperware is gone.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Get your ashes pressed into the pages of a book. Like, you...
That would be kind of cool.
That'd be interesting. I'm not sure if you can actually do that, but
well,
if you could...
they can make them into diamonds, so I
don't... No. Get your ashes, like, turned into ink, and then you can... Like, someone can use that ink to write a book.
On the paper made from some of my other ashes.
This book is 100% me.
So there are books out there bound in human skin.
I know.
And it creeps me out.
It's so freaky.
Oh, man. I used to go to UGA, and they had books with human skin on display in one of the buildings. Much like the student center, you would just walk in, but there'd be books with human skin binding them. And it was very weird to me. It's not
like,
a fan.
Oh gosh. Okay. It's like having, I think, I don't remember where it is, but there is a university that has its taxidermied founder, like, in a glass case.
That is too much. I can't do that.
Oh, gosh. Taxidermy is weird enough as it is.
It really is. I can't handle it.
I wonder how aliens would feel about, like, taxidermy.
Would they even know at first that they're not alive anymore? Maybe first contact is happening between some taxidermied animals and some aliens, and they're like, why aren't they responsive? Why aren't they talking? Why aren't they doing anything?
Like, taxidermy and wax museums, I think, are some of the things that would be really, really weird to aliens.
There are a lot of things that would be really weird to aliens.
They're weird to us, too. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's so many things humans do that weird other humans out. Like, if we made first contact with an alien, they're just like, what the fuck are you doing? We're just like, I don't even know.
Another thing that would be weird to aliens, sex shops. Are these torture devices? What are these? I don't know.
No one knows. And we have gotten very far afield. So.
Well, actually, first contact is a trope.
First contact, yes.
So we're not that far afield.
And I do love all of the new sort of stories that have cropped up. The humans are weird stories.
Yeah.
Have you seen those, like, online?
I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I bet that they are very interesting because humans are very weird.
Super strange.
Like us.
There's actually an anthology that I bought. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like an independently published anthology of stories that are detailing, like, humans being weird two aliens, and it's just got all of these stories, and I keep finding them on, like, Tumblr and Wattpad and stuff. And it's just like, yes, the humans have a rope, and now they're swinging around on it. And why are they doing this? Why are they attaching this rope to a tree and then leaping off it? Off a cliff, into a body of water.
Are they trying to kill themselves?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that's just one of the few things. There's the entire saga of Stabby the Space Roomba, which is nice. Just a Roomba with a knife taped to it. Like, there's nothing special about the Roomba, other than the knife taped to it. It's just a normal Roomba, but it's in space, and it's got a knife taped to it.
But it could go on forever.
And it's got... And, like, it jumps fandoms. From, like, I think it started from this other podcast, like, Wolf 459 or whatever it is. It's another, like, sci-fi podcast, mm-hmm. but that one's actually got, like, planning and plot. So, it's like a role-playing podcast, I think,
okay,
maybe?
Okay.
I don't know. But, so yeah, the fandom, that podcast fandom is just like, hey, what if there was a Roomba on board that somebody strapped strapped a knife to, and then it just sort of blew up from there, and it's jumping science fiction fandoms, like, the Star Wars fandom got it, and it's like, ah, yes, Admiral Stabby, because apparently the Roomba now takes the, rank of the highest ranking officer that it has stabbed.
Okay. It's more effective than stormtroopers.
Exactly. And apparently, Vader gets a hold of Stabby, and replaces the knife with a tiny lightsaber.
Nice.
And, like, lets it roam around the Death Star.
Cutting off people's ankles?
That's fine. But hey, if you were stabbed in the ankle by a, you know, just like a laser knife, I guess? A light knife?
Would it cauterize the wound? You might live. You'd be fine.
You'd probably live. Like, you would have a whole bunch of nerve damage.
And you'd be missing a foot, but you'd live.
You'd live. It's fine.
First contact is one of my favorite tropes, I think, because mm-hmm. you can do so much with it.
Yeah.
Like, humans are aggressive or non-aggressive, really weird or just, you know, glamour.
Super straight-laced.
Yeah.
That'd be super funny.
Like a Puritan society. Oh, they encountered the Amish first. That'd be hilarious. I bet it's been written.
Oh my gosh.
Everything's been written.
That'd be so fun, though.
It is one of my favorite tropes.
First contact was made in Puritan England.
That would be...
During the, oh gosh, what was it, like, the Great Revolution or something like that?
Wow, there's just so many you could do. Like, first contact is with a cult. Like... You know, anything like that, and they get them to drink the Kool-Aid. And
the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster.
Yeah, I mean...
They get the aliens to drink the Kool-Aid, and that's how, like, conquest is averted.
Exactly. I mean, there's so much you can do with the first contact trope. Mm-hmm. So, I really love it. But I was sitting there trying to figure out things that I have read or seen, and the list was small for how much I like this trope, but E.T. Mm-hmm. is definitely a first contact one, yep. And it does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, I've seen War of the Worlds, the movie, but I don't remember that much about it. I mean, it's a Will Smith movie, right? From 15 years ago, 10 years ago. But it's surprisingly one of my favorite tropes for how few things that I have seen that do it and do it well.
Yeah. I think the problem is that, like, first contact was a very popular trope in, like, the golden age of science mm-hmm. fiction. And now, we tend to see things that are either, there is no first contact because it's just, like, war immediately, or humans and aliens have already been integrated.
Exactly.
At some level. Like, it might be still secret, like Men in Black, or it could be, like, total integration, like, this has been happening forever.
Or the stories just start where the first contact happened in the past.
Yeah.
But I tried to think of it, tried to go back to Stargate because it's my favorite. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are aliens, there are humans, so there must have been first contact at some point. But the whole point of Stargate is that all the aliens actually started from Earth and came from Earth and they colonized space. But then Earth kind of forgets that history and knowledge.
which begs the question, is that actually first contact?
And I'm starting to wonder, because I feel like maybe they came from space and colonized Earth and then left again. I need to rewatch it now. And I've seen it so many times. I have it all on DVD, though, so it's fine.
So it's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
I just need to get my facts straight before I talk about it, because somebody eventually is going to call me out on this.
Hey, but if we're blatantly wrong, then that'll give people a reason to comment, right?
Right.
That is going to be my excuse now every time I actually make a factual error. Feel free to correct me.
For me, it's probably all the time.
Yeah. Yo, same. We are trying our best, but we're not listening.
But we're not.
We're trying our best, but we're just not there yet.
We've got lives, college.
College is hard, okay?
It's been a bad week.
It's been a rough February right now.
It really has. It's only halfway through.
Oh, gosh. Thankfully, February is shorter than all the other months.
So true.
All right. Well, next up, I've got the sealed evil in a can trope.
Oh.
Which is like Pandora's box.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like the science fiction version.
I didn't come across that one. I'm interested.
Because it's just like, yeah, it's basically Pandora's box, but the sci-fi version. It could, like, the evil in a can could be, like, an AI.
Yeah.
Or, like, some sort of, it's just a true evil being that has been sealed away and is so awful, and you just, and for some reason we can't actually kill the true evil, or at least the true evil cannot be killed until this certain time, for whatever reason.
The nicer side is a genie in a bottle.
It's the slightly nicer side. Yeah. Like, traditional genies were dicks.
Well, I was thinking, like, Christina Aguilera version. Yeah. Is that who sings it?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I've only ever actually heard the Dove Cameron version.
I don't know that one.
It's just a cover, okay. I guess. Dove Cameron is a Disney Channel.
Oh, okay, okay.
Actress. Anyone who watches Disney Descendants, hey, you're my people.
I'm trying to think of what we were talking about.
Evil in a can.
Oh, right. Okay.
Evil in a can. So sometimes, like, the evil will break itself out for just because the seal's been weakened, or because certain conditions have been met, or they've tricked someone else into doing it for them. Because, you know, apparently, even Lacan can just talk to people. Sometimes. Mind control.
What are some works? Do you have any examples? I'm trying to think of anything that I've potentially seen or read.
Most of what I've seen is, like, web series.
Mm-hmm.
But Aladdin. In, like, Jafar in Aladdin, like, mm-hmm. He becomes the evil in a can at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he is the evil, genie. The Titans in Hercules, if you've ever seen the Disney's Hercules movies.
I have, but it's been so long.
So, there's all of the Titans are the big bads of the movie, and they've been sealed away in Hades.
Okay.
You know, in the depths of Hades forever. But they were released because of, like, the planets aligning and stuff.
Oh, that makes me think. I'm a nanny, so I watch a lot of kids' movies. But mm-hmm. The Kung Fu Panda series, I think in one of them, they release these evil spirits. And they come out and they have to Kung Fu fight to,
yep.
You know, defeat the evil spirits and take back their little in-the-trees village.
Yep.
So I have seen one.
Yes.
It's just Kung Fu Panda 3.
Excellent. Oh my gosh, I am so happy right now. I'm looking at the tropes page for it, and there's this web series that I adore. It's called No Evil, and all of the characters in No Evil are based off of, like, mythological figures, either like frontier American mythology or like Native American mythologies. And because I was going to talk about No Evil having this trope, but like no one's ever heard of this web series.
Yeah, I haven't.
It's a very good web series. All of the main characters are these spirits. They're spirits based off of the mythological figures, or the gods or whatever. And in the series, the Black Tezcatlipoca, which is this it's this sort of darkness that started spreading across the land, and it like puts everyone to sleep and everything. So, like, plants die, people fall into like Sleeping Beauty-esque sleep, and you can't, like, you don't survive if it's on you too long, and like if you don't if you aren't woken up by like a shaman and everything. And it was sealed away at the start of this at the start of the series by Xochipilli, Quetzal, and Ixtilton, who are all spirits, and they're all like shamans or whatever. And like they gave up some of their like abilities to seal away the Tezcatlipoca, along with another spirit, Raven, who gave up her entire life to seal the Black Tezcatlipoca away. So there's this kid named Charles, and he's trying to take the seals away from the three, you know, shamans or whatever. I don't want to say their names over and over again because they're long. Even though Xochiquetzal is my homegirl, I love her. She's super OP. So Charles is trying to take all of their seals away from them to control the Black Tezcatlipoca. And like the blackness is called the Ick. And it's been like he's been spreading it around and everything. So they're trying to find a way to stop Charles.
I find it funny that it's called the Ick, because to Black me that's Ick. Like
yeah.
Cooties. Like, oh, it's the Ick.
Yeah, so they're just trying to, yep. But it's still a very good web series. Would recommend. It's got good music.
That's half the battle sometimes.
Yeah, and it's all hand drawn animation.
Oh, I didn't realize it was animated.
Yeah, it's all hand drawn animation. It's done in Flash actually, but it's very good. All of the episodes are like multiple minutes long, completely voice acted.
That sounds pretty cool.
It's very good.
I, for some reason, automatically assumed it was live action.
Nope.
I don't know that I've seen a web series that was animated. I've only seen live action ones.
I've only really seen animated ones.
Okay.
Hey, to all my Rooster Teeth people who watch Ruby.
So, the trope I want to talk about. Next up, you're not done?
No. I was doing that for you.
Oh, okay.
Just next up is...
I was like, oh no, I interrupted
you. No.
I jokingly refer to it as the Zoe Saldana trope, which is really the green-skinned space babe.
Oh.
Because...
Poor Zoe Saldana.
She was Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy, who is green.
Very green.
And she was Neytiri in Avatar, who is blue.
So, you know... Aliens are cool colors, apparently.
And sexy, apparently. Like, of course they're gonna look pretty much just like a human woman, but blue or green.
Occasionally they might have antenna.
Right, or like in Avatar, she's got the kind of strange nose that sets them apart.
Smurfy cat people.
Yeah, and tails, I guess they have tails.
They right? have tails, yeah. But I'm pretty sure their tails are also the genitalia, which is weird.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. It's either their tails or, like, something to do with their hair.
I remember there's something weird about it now that you said that.
Yeah.
But we've talked about Avatar before, about how little we remember for everyone saying it was such a great movie.
No one remembers it. No one remembers it. I challenge you. Name three characters without Googling it. Name one character without Googling it.
Well.
You can't do it.
I was about to, but it's someone I Googled earlier, so it doesn't count. and it's Zoe Saldana. And that's the only thing I remembered about Avatar. I was like, blue, Zoe Saldana.
Why can't she's not, that's not even a character name, that's an actor name, so try well, again.
Neytiri,
yeah.
But I just thought it was hilarious that the examples I immediately thought of were both the same actress. It's like, typecast for being a green-skinned space babe.
Excellent.
And then I was thinking, Star Trek, she's in that too, and I was like, oh, is she blue or green? But no, she was normal.
She's just Uhura for once.
Yeah, but dating an alien.
Well, half alien.
Oh, is he only half alien?
Spock's only half alien, yeah.
I don't know enough about Star Trek, apparently.
Because his dad was one of those weirdos who fell in love with a human. You know.
Well, that's similar to another trope, Boldly Coming. It's basically first encountering Captain Kirk style.
Which is hilarious considering how much Captain Kirk does not actually have sex.
Yeah, but everyone...
I don't know where that, like, how that got started. It was probably male wish fulfillment because, like...
It may have just been the flirting. And people just make assumptions. Because isn't even he then, flirty?
He's kind of a dork. Like, he reads... He reads poetry, and he's super respectful of women.
Some people like that, okay?
He reads poetry, he's super respectful of, like,
but he's a women. Captain of a ship.
Yeah, I think it's guys projecting, honestly. Like, I think that's wish fulfillment. But no, the sexy first encounters are very true to humanity.
It's weird, too. That, to me, that's a weird trope, because it's a first encounter of a different kind, and so how is sex, like, the first thing that comes to mind when you're encountering an alien? I don't get that. And then, also, one thing I read brought up a good point of genitalia may not be the same across all of the species that you would encounter, so how does that even work? But... we don't need to get too far into that. It's just, it's a weird trope to me.
Yup.
There's an example of it in Stargate. In the movie, so the original movie, there's a character, Dr. Daniel Jackson, who is an archaeologist, I think. Anthropologist or archaeologist. I think he's an archaeologist because he would dig up artifacts, yeah. And... he goes to another planet and gets married when he gets there and, you know, has relations with his wife. But he marries the first alien he meets, basically, this beautiful woman. And so I was sitting there trying to think up of examples. And, of course, Stargate had an example.
Yup.
Stargate has an example of everything.
Yup. Oh, no. But it's just, like, the thing is, though, is that that would totally happen, is the thing. First contact, it's, like, there's going to be two types of people when we finally meet aliens. And this is going to be the people who are going to be afraid of the aliens and are going to want to shoot all of them, and the people who are going to want to fuck the aliens.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen, guys. We are already sexualizing the alien other, all right?
It's binary. It's either death or sex. Nothing else.
It's what's going to happen. Like, there's going to be, like, it's a spectrum... but both ends are gonna happen.
Or they both happen.
They're gonna like, they might happen at the same time. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? We're not gonna know until we meet aliens. But no, like...
well, it could have already happened.
It and might have
so
already happened.
So integrated, we don't know.
We don't know. Thank you, Men in Black.
I know.
Oh my gosh. Watching those movies. Like, I tried to rewatch the first one recently, but I can't stand bugs.
I don't think I've seen it since I was a kid.
There was a lot of roaches in it, and I was just like, ooh, gosh, no.
I'm from South Carolina, and we had palmetto bug infestations at my house when we were trying to move, and those are flying roaches, so yeah. Probably did not faze me.
No, I'm from Georgia, so I'm generally used to roaches, but they just creep me out.
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere, and they're still creepy.
And
all
they're
right?
huge.
They're so big.
And they're not scared of you.
Roaches don't fear anything.
They don't. I mean, they survive everything other than a shoe.
Roaches don't fear God or man.
They really don't.
The most terrifying experience I've ever had in my life was I was, in my house, it was, 3 a.m. I was having a sleepover with one of my friends, and we were going down the stairs for whatever reason, and above us, on the wall, there was, 3-inch-long roach, just, 2 feet above us, and we were both, holding our mouths closed to make sure that we didn't scream and wake up everybody in the house.
My big bug fear is irrational, because it's not something that can hurt you at all, and it's daddy long legs. I hate them and will not go near one, even though I know they are completely harmless and they do more good than harm. They eat other bugs.
I mean, they are creepy.
Well, one time I got locked out of my sister's house when I was house sitting, and I went to her back door to try and get in, and it was covered in 100 daddy long legs, and I was like, I will sleep on the cold grass in the rain. I am not touching that door. I could not.
Yo, I feel that. That's me with any spider. Oh my gosh.
I can handle the little ones, but those creepy little long legs are awful.
Yeah. And we would probably be closer to the end. If the aliens looked like spiders, we would be closer to the end of people who would just kill them all.
One would hope. Not on the other end of the spectrum. That'd get really weird.
That would get weird. There are people who are going to.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't the first episode of Black Mirror super weird? Have you ever seen it?
I haven't seen it actually. I have heard that it's super weird in general.
I think there's something about someone having sex with a pig, which is why I haven't watched it.
Yikes.
So that just proves your point that people will do anything.
It's going to happen, guys.
Yeah.
The faster you accept that people are into freaky shit, the easier your life is.
Maybe.
you just say, all right, and then move on.
Acknowledge with a nod and get on with your life.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Which, that also sort of ties into the concept of, suspension of disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some people who think, having sex with an alien, that's totally unrealistic. That doesn't suspend my, my suspension of disbelief can't handle that.
I guess that's me.
Yeah. So you're one of those people, and I'm one of these people, I don't know if it makes me gullible or something, but, my suspension of disbelief is, miles wide. It's so, I'll just be like, all right, that cat talks and it's the president of Mars. All right, then. That's reasonable.
It's really hard for me to suspend my disbelief. And not even just in speculative fiction, but everything. Yeah. Watching any TV or movie, I am the most critical person. So
no, I'm sitting here that's fine. That's reasonable. that seems legit. Have you ever seen Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog?
I haven't.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, I may be getting this wrong, but is Neil Patrick Harris in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the main character. See, I was going to talk about that, but I don't want to spoil it for you.
You can give little tiny spoilers.
No, this is very twit. It's not, important to the plot, but it is definitely a twist, at the very end of the thing. But the thing is, I didn't realize it was a twist. I didn't realize it was a twist until I got out of the ballroom that I was watching it in, because I was watching it at Dragon Con, actually. Big old ballroom full of people singing along in perfect time. I had never seen it before.
Yeah.
Neither had my family. So we're all sitting there what is going on here? But, I walk out of the theater and my parents are going, did you expect that? Did you expect that one thing to happen? And they're just like, no, absolutely not. And I'm sitting here you mean it wasn't obvious? It literally never occurred to me that, I really can't explain this without giving that part away, but it's very small.
You can spoil it.
It's been around for a while.
Right.
So, there's a villain the leader of the Evil League of Evil is called Bad Horse. And apparently, my parents thought he was just, like, a horse-themed villain. And I'm sitting here thinking the entire time, he's a horse. So when they opened up the room to the Evil League of Evil meeting, and there's just a horse standing there at the end of the table, I'm just like, yeah, that's Bad Horse. And apparently my parents were, like, shook. They're like, I wasn't expecting an actual horse. I'm just like, what else would you possibly be expecting?
Well, isn't the movie supposed to be kind of campy, cheesy?
Yeah.
So then I feel like I would expect it too. Like, if you go into it knowing that it's like a fun, cheesy kind of movie, then I feel like you'd be like, yeah, that's definitely gonna be a horse. So I can see your side of that.
But yeah, it just never occurred to me that he wasn't gonna be a horse.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I suppose there's also the thing where Bad Horse sent, like, letters and made phone calls to the main character. So they're expecting a horse-themed supervillain, and I'm just sitting here that it's just a horse. Listen, horses are evil.
That's true.
Oh. Horses are filled with malice.
They really are. I used to clean out stalls.
They're filled with malice and can see ghosts.
I was
bad combination.
So afraid of them. Feeding them carrots. Bite your hand off.
Yup. Yeah, my suspension of disbelief is, like, off the charts. Like, this is a reasonable thing. No, it's not. It's not. This cat talks and offers you magic powers in return for your immortal soul.
You know what? I say
reasonable.
That I don't have. I don't know. I was watching. This is before the Kevin Spacey stuff came out. I was watching a Kevin Spacey movie on Netflix with my niece and nephew where he becomes comatose. And his inside, like, his spirit goes into a cat's body, and his family adopts that cat. And so he's trying to, like, make up for being a shitty father by being a good cat so that he can be put back into his body and come out of his coma. Mm-hmm. The kids were completely uninterested in this movie, and they were off playing, and I sat there and watched every second of it, enthralled with this cat, with Kevin Spacey's character's, you know, personality. And I'm sitting here like, I cannot believe I am watching this. It got terrible ratings. I looked it up. Rotten Tomatoes, terrible. But I sat there and watched every second. They kept asking if they could change it. And I was like, no, I'm watching this. I'm invested in this. But now I can't watch it again.
Yeah, obviously.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. Like, I can't watch Pirates of the Caribbean anymore.
Who's in that?
Johnny Depp.
I didn't hear anything about Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
I'll have to do some Googling later.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. There are a bunch of good movies of him in it. There's too much of this in the world.
Murder on the Orient Express is only acceptable because he dies 20 minutes in.
True. I did go see that in theaters.
So did I.
I was even in it.
So did I. And I had a good time. And I had an even better time after he died.
I had a weird experience going to see that movie because I went at 9 in the morning on a weekday.
Nice.
And it was a bunch of old people. And
honestly, that's the best time to go see a movie.
Except there was this woman in the row in front of me who was very expressive and not in a good way, not in like a fun, everyone's getting into it kind of way. But before the movie started, there was a trailer for one of the 50 Shades of Grey movies. Mm-hmm. And she just starts booing and giving these thumbs down. She's just booing really loudly the whole time. And I was like, we get it. You don't like it. Like, you don't need to boo for 30 seconds. And yes. Then at the end of the movie, she gave it a standing ovation and was like cheering. And no one else was. So she was just like the awkward one standing in a movie theater clapping. But she was just the most expressive person who would yell things at the characters on the screen the entire movie.
Nice. I'm glad I'm not that bad, but if you don't like commentary, do not go to a movie with me because I will sit there and I will crack jokes.
I crack jokes too, quietly to the people.
Quietly to my, you know, friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Friends, family, countrymen.
However,
not the entire theater.
Yeah.
The entire theater is not your stage.
Yeah.
Please refrain.
Or like the people who sit there. I used to work in a movie theater. People talk on the phone in a movie, things people do in a movie, it blows my mind. I was an usher, I made popcorn, I did all sorts of things, and then eventually was a bartender at a movie theater. And, I mean, you see some crazy stuff. Not even from the people going to see movies, but from people working at the movie theater. Like, it is a bizarre place to work.
Movie theaters attract the weirdos.
They do.
And there that's were the truth right
two
there.
Two in my town, and one was known for being super sketchy and gross. And so I purposefully did not work at that one.
Nice.
I worked at an AMC, and it wasn't too bad, because it was fairly new.
Nice. Yeah. My town only has two movie theaters anymore, and thankfully neither of them are very sketchy.
That's good.
I still can't get a job at either of them, though, mostly because they don't like to hire people for just the summer.
Yeah, that's true. And they want people who can work during school hours and things like that. But the one I worked at, since it had a bar, you had to be 18 to work there.
Mm.
But then they only paid minimum wage, and so it's like, rude. You're not going to find a lot of above 18-year-olds who want to work for minimum wage at a movie theater.
Exactly.
Whereas you could find high schoolers who want to work for minimum wage anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. That's the issue.
Yeah, because
they're still living at home, and they don't have to deal with
exactly
things.
I mean, I made $5.50 an hour as a bartender.
Yikes.
But then no one tipped because it was a movie theater.
Yeah, exactly. Rude.
Okay, we should get back to tropes.
I mean, like, you know, whatever.
We're talking too much about my life.
Are you telling me that people don't want insight into our lives? Excuse you.
Well, maybe yours. I've worked too many places. I have too many crazy stories. Can't hold down a job, okay?
I can't get a job. So, well,
you wouldn't want some of the jobs I had. I worked at a hotel. That was awful.
I've heard bad things about working in hotels.
Oh, not fun.
I've heard that working in a hotel might be equivalent to living in a crap sack world, which is another another trope.
I haven't heard this one either. You've got all the tropes I've never heard of.
Excellent. That's the joy of the thing. The crap sack world is a setting where everything that can go wrong will go horribly wrong.
Uh-huh.
Is always applicable. It's, you know, post-apocalyptic worlds. It's every single
a boy and his dog.
Yeah, every single a boy and his dog. It's, you know, the dystopian worlds with the, like, completely run-down buildings and all of... And, like, radiation poisoning everywhere, and all of the plants are dead, and all of the buildings are in ruins, and, you know, it's generally terrible.
Have you ever read The Road?
No.
By Cormac McCarthy?
No, I have not.
It is post-apocalyptic, and it's a man and his son instead of a boy and his dog. But what's
We're moving up in the world.
except not. Post-apocalyptic. And cannibalism. Much like a boy and his dog.
There's more cannibalism. Of course.
But, of course, this is much later than A Boy and His Dog because I came out in, like, 68, 69. But what was so weird about that book to me was that they didn't have character names or punctuation. It was, like, the worst book ever to read with no punctuation, no quotation marks, no periods, I mean, there were, like, 7 periods in the whole book.
Yikes.
It was awful. Like, it was supposed to make you feel like you were in a post-apocalyptic world.
That'll do it. That'll do it. I mean, just hearing about that once makes me want to kill myself.
They were eating rotten apples and human flesh.
Yikes. Yikes. Oh, no. Yeah, that's a crap sack world right there. Thanks, guys.
Oh, it's awful.
Ugh. I mean, like, there are some more interesting ones that are... Like, there's ones that are played for laughs, like, if you've ever seen, South Park has episodes that are like that, Ed, Edd n Eddy does too.
Oh, I loved that show.
Happy Tree Friends.
Haven't seen that one.
Don't.
Okay.
I watched a few episodes of Happy Tree Friends. Like, the animation is bright and colorful, and then... The actual show starts. Yikes.
Well, it's Adult Swim, isn't it?
Something like that. I actually saw it on Netflix.
Okay.
So.
I think originally it was on Adult Swim, not meant for children.
It's definitely not, no. There's a lot of gore. There is a lot of gore. And, but yeah, the crapsack world is just, you know, everything's trying to kill you. It's sort of like a death world. A death world is where literally everything's trying to kill you. The plants, the animals, the actual ground, the atmosphere. If you can survive a death world, then, you're a badass. Which is why it also links to the trope world of badasses, where just everyone's, like, a hardened veteran and can do these amazing things.
I feel like the media has made us believe that Earth is a death world. Everything is trying to kill us. Cell phones, technology.
The death world tropes page has an entire subfolder for Australia.
Oh, yes. That is delightful.
It's a very long subfolder, too.
But it's so true. I see posts on Reddit all the time of these spiders the size of dinner plates. It makes me want to never go to Australia.
Okay, Australia, now you're just showing off. There's actually... It's a fire swirl. It's a tornado that... a tornado that hits a wildfire... And then...
Spews fire?
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
All right, Australia, we get the point.
You're badass.
See? Look at that.
Oh my god.
That's terrible. Like, no one can see this right now. I might post a link to the video in the description of this video.
You should.
To a firenado. Because that's,
the worst thing ever? And then you gotta imagine there are spiders and snakes in that fire tornado.
The worst! The actual worst! Like, only thing worse is if it was, like, in an erupting volcano. Like, congrats. We get it,
all right? With aliens coming down.
We get it, all right? Calm down. Oh, man. Actually, we're gonna go back a bit.
Okay.
Back to the first contact. Because, one of my favorite movies, I believe, counts as First Contact, and that would be the movie Megamind.
I haven't seen that one.
It's so good. You need to see it.
Disney Pixar one, right?
No, like I believe DreamWorks. It's DreamWorks.
Yeah. Hold on. No, you're right. It's DreamWorks. Mm.
But it's such a good movie. Megamind is such, like, it is horribly underrated, because, like, and the thing is, they approach. It's not really, like, the first contact isn't really, like, the main point of the story. Except for there's definitely the cultural differences that are interesting. Because you've got two aliens involved in Earth. It's like, they've got the Superman-styled one, Metro Man, and they've got Megamind, who is, you know, the stereotypical, like, giant head, tiny body, blue alien, and... He's a villain because that's what people expect.
Yeah.
Like, that's what expected. That's what's, you know, easiest for him. He's very bad at it. And the thing is that he's made into a villain because it's expected of him because he's this weird-looking alien dude. And, like, he got picked on when he was in, you know, grade school.
You know what this reminds me of? It's Lilo and Stitch.
Lilo and Stitch, which is also a great first contact.
It is. I didn't think of it till you brought up Megamind. That's what it's called.
Right? Yes, Megamind.
Because Stitch comes down with the other aliens and then finds Lilo and befriends her. It's a great first contact movie.
And, like, it's not officially first contact because... Agent Bubbles talks about how he had contacted with aliens earlier, but it is a first contact for both Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah.
So Stitch is like, what are these squishy things, and why do they all live on water?
Well, what cracks me up is that Stitch passed as a dog in the first movie. Because Lilo's like, oh, I got a dog. And I'm like, it's blue.
This is a blue dog. But then again, like, what else is she gonna think that he is?
I mean, I would have just freaked out immediately and be like, that's not a dog.
Honestly, I would love a blue dog. Like, would recommend. And if your blue dog happens to have six legs and be super strong, sometimes you just gotta take it.
It doesn't bark, but makes weird noises.
Huskies.
Really?
Huskies make weird noises.
Huh. I don't think I've ever seen one in real life.
There are actually a few on campus.
Oh.
Yeah. But yeah, huskies make super weird noises. They don't actually bark. It is strange. But
might be nice. Barking can be annoying.
But they're loud. Is the thing. That they make weird noises and they make loud.
They're not like
noises.
Whispering in a corner. That'd be even creepier.
That would be super scary.
I know.
If your dog starts whispering to you, please call animal control. It might be possessed.
Like a boy and his dog. It's just gonna keep coming up.
It's just gonna keep coming up. In fact, we should probably end this here.
Okay.
Yikes. We'll see you guys next week. Hopefully there will be less cannibalism.
Yes.